Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prisoners will be black because you don't blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisoners in the United States are black people. You know you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, well, who cares? Marching has never changed anything. We'll be right back.
Now learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it, just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it, because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
All right. let's see. Hopefully I got my mic open. Now there's, we do our little morning routine and motivation. If you go to our page, which is DIY Housing TV, DIY Housing TV, or It's My House, I think you still get through to It's My House as well. But we're using both of those names. Some of the people that they want to stick with It's My House. So we got one name for marketing, one then offline is something else. Anyway, so there's a piece that was submitted by Chris Collins yesterday, and it's a TED Talk, and it's on our Facebook page, so you get the whole audio-visual experience of it. And it's titled A Prescription for Human Connection by Chase Hansen, young man. It's a TED Talk. We tried to get the audio, but then TED Talk's got somewhere they wouldn't let us upload it to Blog Talk, which that happens on occasion. Sometimes we can get it, sometimes we can't. But so I put it on our Facebook page, so when you get a chance, go listen to the motivational piece by Chase Hansen. He's about 10 years old, 19 years old, and it's titled A Prescription for Human Connection. It's a pretty good TED Talk. Not that long, but I would recommend it. And thank you, Chris Collins, for that. Now, let's see. Today, continuing from yesterday, continuing from Friday. Jump off title is Family Wealth versus Reparations. Family Wealth versus Reparations. And before we get into that, we have one more audio to play, which is a short one, about 2 minutes. But the regulars, jump over to check out the link that Chris Collins shared with us yesterday on the TED Talk. And for brand new people, you can stay here and listen to. This is short. About Jamarian Styles. Which that takes about 2 minutes. And then we'll come back with Family Wealth versus Reparations. One I'm looking for. Oh, here we go. Before I play that, in our program notes, and our program notes can be seen on Twitter, DIY Housing TV, or on Blog Talk itself. And so we're going to cover family wealth, earth wealth, barometers, because yesterday I went into more detail about what earth wealth is. I think most people, if not all people, can relate to it. Let's see, I'm trying to find my way back to the studio. Okay. So, all right, so we'll be back in 2 minutes with Family Wealth versus Reparations.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Styles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarion. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarion took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarion, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarion Styles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarion can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, so today's title is Family Wealth versus Reparations, and let me throw some info out here. We're going to measure wealth based on 1 acre of land, all right? And if you go to our Facebook page, DIY Housing TV, so you get a little visual here. Once again, our Facebook group is DIY Housing TV at Earthwell Forest. Now, I've loaded two pictures on as you scroll down, it'll be two pictures, and it's captioned, Earthwell Forest. Now, the two pictures that you see there, I'm not in the picture, but I took those pictures. And our 4 acres is called Earth, I call it Earth Wealth Forest. And so you have two pictures. One, you got three guys that are walking on. We're walking up throughout the grounds. This is on the day I bought it. I took these pictures on the day I bought it. And the other picture has, nobody, you see what's there. Right? So that's worth well for us. So that gives you a little visual because we're going to use the acre as a measure. That's how we're measuring wealth today. We'll come back to dollars at the end of this, but the real dollars are, you can use that as measuring, but I think an acre is a pretty good way of measuring wealth. So We're going to take a look at Earth Wealth Barometers here in a moment. Household income, we might take a look at that as a measuring tool of wealth. And then family-based wealth. That's some of the areas we'll cover today. Now, let's jump to what I call Earth Wealth Barometers, or you can call them natural resources. We're using within that acre, okay, where you see three men walking and then the other picture where you see no humans, okay, there's a lot of wealth there. So, and it's all natural resources. So natural wealth, natural resources barometers. So I've got 12. There are 11 seen, but the 12th one you have to visualize. All right, now, one of the wealth barometers, you can't see it because it's below the ground, and I covered this yesterday. There's groundwater. And we need to keep in mind that one acre of land is equivalent to, is 43,560 square feet. So as you look at the ground in those two pictures, below the surface, not immediately below the surface, but below the surface, there's per acre is 43,560 square feet. That's just for an acre. Now, that's the measure of the acre. Now, for groundwater, okay, 1 acre of when you talk about, if you measure water in terms of liters, 1 acre contains 102,790 liters of water. Once again, 1 acre equals 102,790 liters of water. That's what's in that picture below the surface. That's a natural, groundwater is a natural resource. You can tap it and you can monetize it and you can make money from it. That's just one source. I'm going to name 11, a total of 12 today. 11 are right there on the property. The other one we're going to have to add in. The next natural resource is what I call the forest floor. Forest floor wealth. The first type of wealth was groundwater wealth. The second type of wealth is forest floor wealth. As you look at the ground there, there's a bunch of dead leaves there. There are tree branches there too. Those are biofuels. If you collect them up and then press them, dry them out and then press them into pellets, fuel pellets, you can heat your home, heat water, cook meals by using biofuels. So the floor of that, like I said, the forest floor contains an infinite amount of biofuels. All right, now, let's go to the third source of wealth on here. In that picture, rainwater wealth. Now, it wasn't raining on the day I took this, but when it does rain on that, like it's raining where I went right now. All right, if rain covers that whole acre of land, you have an additional 102,790 liters of rainwater. You can add that on. That's going to be added on to whatever water is below the surface already. The next form of wealth is vegetation wealth. In those pictures, you see pictures, not pictures, you see trees and other plants. Okay? And nobody waters that acre of land. You know, those are healthy trees. No human being, there's no tap water on it whatsoever. So how do these trees grow? Well, they're taking in groundwater. As a matter of fact, let's just look real quick. And there's no set number on this. Amount of water. Let's look it up this way. Amount of water. Wait, I'm losing. How many liters of water does a tree need? And I'll say daily. And let's see what numbers we'll come back with. Okay, how much water does a tree need per day? And it depends on the tree. I'm reading right here online, about 10 gallons per inch. Some of those trees are like 16, 18, 21 feet tall. All right, so I'm going to read this all the way through. Let me screenshot it to myself. About 10 gallons per inch of trunk diameter per week. A tree with, 12 inches, diameter will receive 120 gallons during a drought. If there's unlimited water, there are records of trees absorbing 150 gallons of water in a single day. Okay, that depends on the tree and what the age of a tree is. As you can see in those pictures, there's absolutely no shortages of trees. I don't water anything in there. We haven't installed a well in there yet. And even when we do, we're not going to be watering the trees enough like that. But and I should have included the aerial view of that place, because it's just really, I have a lot of trees there. But that just shows you how abundant the earth is in some places more than others when it comes to water. So let me see. Let me go to, and we'll calculate those figures at a later date. Okay, now. Actually, we're using the wealth barometers that we use are ones within view, but many people don't recognize them. All right, so here we go. I'm waiting for my board to repopulate here. And once again, this is, if you can grasp the amount. Now, I'm just going to name 12 today. Some of you will probably see some things I don't see. That they're natural resources right there. All right, so vegetation wealth. Okay, trees, that's just the obvious one. Sunlight wealth, because sun can generate electricity through solar panels. There's building materials wealth. Some of those trees can be harvested, and we can make stairs, furniture, and housing with them if we care to do so. Empty space wealth. You can use it for storage or building. Recyclable wealth. Now, when those leaves hit the forest floor, or the tree branches, drop to the ground or whatever. Basically what we're doing is we're recycling that and converting that into biofuels. Soil wealth. There's an acre of land, you got soil, and that soil can be broken down. Another form of natural resource, what I would call time. As long as we're living and breathing and in good health, we have time. That's an asset. And then the last one, which is not on here, now we would have to take what's on the land already and do something with it or bring it on there. And I just say shelter wealth. We can build houses on there. We can put sheds on there. You know, we can put tents on there or what have you. And like I say, 1 acre is 43,560 square feet. And 1 acre also equals 102,790 liters of water. Now, that's just with 1 acre. Now, we've been using Reba's family, the Bruce settlement in Mississippi. So let's say we started a family business on, and two types of businesses on, and they're the same type on each one of the acres or the 300 acres. So let's say one of the businesses was a shed building business, and we're going to live like George Jetson, because yesterday we talked about George Jetson's work day was about 3 hours long, and he worked 3 days a week. So 9 hours a week work week. That's the work week of George Jetson. So let's apply that to right now. So let's say you have a shed business on each one of those acres, and you produce like George Jetson, but George produces just one shed per hour. All right. So when you bring that into one shed per acre, that's 300 sheds per hour, 900 sheds per day. 3,600 a month, and then 243,200 per year. That's the number of sheds. All right. So we take that figure of 243 sheds that are built by the Booth Collaborative, Family Collaborative, and let's say they sell those sheds for $1,000 a piece. And you can check with Home Depot and Lowe's and see what they're retailing sheds for. But the Booth shed making business would take in $243,200,000 in the course of a year. Divided by 12, that's over $20 million a month. Over $20 million a month. And you can apply those same figures to if each acre I wouldn't recommend they pump out groundwater, although they could and sell it by the liter. But I would recommend capturing, harvesting rainwater and storing that and then selling that by the liter. You'll make millions that way, too. It's two simple businesses. I think everybody can grasp those. But now, going back to the title of today's podcast, family wealth versus reparations. I think it's easier. Well, you know what? In my opinion, now this is just me. In my opinion, some people, there's a lot more people than they think. Some people, they've already got their reparations. The raw materials of it. So, I put it this way, I'm going to use myself as an example. In the picture that we have, those two pictures on our Facebook page that I took, which I called that place Earth Wealth Forest, I consider that part of my reparations. The government didn't give it to me. I had to go out and buy it. All right. Now, with that, okay, I have recognized some of the wealth barometers that I mentioned today here on this live stream. There are, look, some of you out there have looked at those two pictures and see things I haven't even seen. But I just named the 11 or 12 things that I did see. All right. So, you know, and once again, and if you do that, because once again, you got, once again, acres, and let's readjust the picture on this. An acre is 43,560 square feet, but then multiply it by, let's say, 10. Then that jumps up to 43,560 square feet times 10. Yeah, that multiplies to 435,600 square feet of pure raw materials and opportunity. And I don't have to wait on the government to get it, because what they're like right now, you've got people that are lobbying politicians that cost money while they stay. Anybody's got an acre or a half acre or a tenth of an acre or a fifth of an acre, you have more now. Whatever they come up with, California reparations, reparations anywhere else. Now, before I go to the phone lines here, here's what I want you to do. Let's all go to eBay. Okay. Put in eBay search engine, put eBay land for sale. Put that in your search engine. And hit, all right, land, real estate, eBay. Okay, so, and whatever you guys come up with on eBay, let me know. Okay, now, let's see. Okay, here is some land in, hold on, wait a minute, let me backtrack a minute. All right, let's go to Colorado. Okay, so what pops up on my screen, and whatever pops up on yours, let us know. I'm opening up my ear soon. Here's 34.550 acres in the Denver metro area. Let's see, then there's in Park County, Colorado, 1 acre for 5,000, but no, let's see. All right, here's one that's interesting. Colorado land, 5 acres. Got a picture of it. Colorado land, 5 acres. I'm on eBay, people. You can join me. Colorado land on eBay. Colorado land, 5 acres, spectacular mountain view. Owner finance, don't have to deal with a bank. I'm going to add this to my watch list. Let's see. And they're asking for $11,590. Now, they have a buy it now, and I think that's the buy it now price. So, I think that's a pretty good price. All right, so they're asking for, let's just round it up to $12,000. All right, and divide it by 5 acres. So it's like $2,400 an acre. Not bad. Not bad. Let's see. Land for sale, We're still in Colorado. 5 acres. Okay, land for sale in Colorado. Got pictures of it. Five acres. Let's see. Payment 150. Down payment $150 and $125 a month. Okay. That's something that you can pick up right now on eBay. Let's see. All right, here's something. 20 acres. Dolores River Gold Claim in Colorado Rockies in Montrose County. All right, this is, you know, I don't like bidding. I like buy it now, so. And I purchased land off eBay before. It was for as low as $200. Actually, it was $180 an acre. But when you add in the tax and all that, so I just say $200 an acre. So, in any event, there's a lot of power in 1 acre. So, all right. Anyway, my point of view on it is, essentially, it is dramatically and geometrically easier and more efficient to, now it depends on how you define reparations, okay, because I believe in DIY reparations. It's what can I do with the least amount of interference from the government or getting permission from the government. If all I need to do is, you know, present a down payment, monthly payments, pay the property taxes to the local government, that's perfect for me. Now, but for me to go lobby and then find other people that can lobby with me, and then, you know, how far do we go back in time? And then how realistic that the state government or the federal government or whatever government is going to pay each and every person $5 million or a trillion. This is what I can do now on my own. Well, that's how I see it. Okay. So, and it's different for everybody because everybody's got a different definition of reparations. And it can be complex. So, for me, I'm not lobbying no government. I'm not marching. I'm not protesting. Bare minimum, I'll do my marching online just like we just did with, I'll get on my phone and find out what I can buy and go from there. If I'm on a road trip, because there's a lot of stuff you can find that never reaches online when it comes to land. And I'll work with those people and I'll get my land or house that way. And I'm not dealing with banks. I'm not dealing with politicians. I don't have to make YouTube videos. And I don't have to live 300 or 400 years in the past. And there's some people out here pick a number. There's some people out here that are 20 years old, some that are 60 years old, some that are 90 or 100 years old. They have been waiting on reparations for as long as they've been consciously living, and they haven't got it yet from the government. But more power to you if you want to keep on going at it, whereas now we can go on eBay and a gazillion other sites and get our 40 acres and if throw in a mule if you want. Now. Okay, so. Anyway, that's my view on. Anyway, when I'm opening up the phone banks, the phone lines, that's my rant for today. But hopefully you got, you know, like I said, look at the wealth barometers.
Okay, we're here. Hello? I'm just trying to see how to drop one call. There we go.
Okay. I dropped the number that you just called in on, but I opened up your mic.
Okay, yeah, I'm here.
Online.
I'm here. I dropped your other call, okay. Too.
Okay. All right. So, all right. Anyway, I'm done with my rant. So, what's your question? Okay, Reba, you there? All right. Well, she's somewhere around. Reba, I'm moving.
We're in the car.
In
Milwaukee. Can you hear me?
Are you moving?
I was trying to put it on the car. So it's not quite working, but I can hear you. Yeah, you can hear us. It's just I'm trying to get the audio up. Okay.
They Thursday too, man. This week flying by. Oh, you know what? I forgot while we're waiting on Reba. I ran across a real nice tent community like 2 hours outside of New York City, which, excuse me, we're going to copy off of. It's Reba dropped off, so she'll call back in. And before we go to our next caller, the tent city that I ran across, and I got pictures of it, is Tent City Ocean Grove, or Ocean Grove Tent City. Ocean Grove Tent City. They have a website. Just go to Ocean, type in any search engine, Ocean Grove Tent City. And there was this article I read this morning on Google News where this lady, she lives in a tent about four or five months out of the year. And this place is, another name for it is Ocean Grove Tent Colony. You know, I got to put that in my notes. Tent Colony. Yeah, I like that. Tent Colony. Perfect. Okay, Tent Colony. But put in Ocean Grove Tent City and take a look at those pictures, man. It's the way people live out here is very interesting. Okay, matter of fact, let's see, Can I find, I need to find that, ladies. I need to find that article. Okay. Woman, there's a lot of women living in tents, lives in tents 4 months. I think it's 4 months. Okay, they got a lot of women in tent stories online. Let's see. Woman living in tents for 5 months because we couldn't afford. Let's see. Let me put in NYC. Okay, Reeve, I'm coming back. Oh, there's a whole lot of tent stories. Okay, let me hold it, Reeve. I'm coming to you now. Okay. On my way back to the studio. Okay, Reeve, I'm just waiting for the my phone to repopulate, then I can turn your mic back on. Okay, let me see. Okay, great. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Can you hear?
Yep, I can hear you clear.
Good, because I wasn't, if the car speaker would let you hear us, I kept putting the phone speaker on, but that was disconnecting the auxiliary. So my son is here today, yeah.
Okay, well, I went through the at least 11 or 12 forms of wealth just sitting on an average acre of land that's solely undeveloped. And then what I did, I don't know if you heard the part where I took I said if you built one shed an hour on each one of those 300 acres, that's 900 sheds per day. Excuse me, 900 sheds per week. $300. You don't work a full week. You just work 3 days. That's it. And you only work for 3 hours a day.
We've been listening since 9:30. We've been listening in attentively.
Okay.
Jeff?
Well, you heard that part. Okay.
Yeah, I have a question. Why would a person keep land instead of selling it? Why is to keep the land instead of selling it?
Well, if you sold land and you had no additional land that you were holding on to at the same time. I'll give an example. My next-door neighbor, who lived to be 103 in Washington, D.C., they just buried her like a couple of weeks ago. Her children, she had two of them, and they sold the family house, which I call the ancestral house, for over $600,000. Now, her grandchildren and her great-grandchildren, once you sell the land or a house and you have no other additional parcels of land or income properties, if all you have is that particular piece of land or house, then your next generation, and including you basically start all over again. I ask you, what average 25-year-old, 35-year-old, or 45-year-old, and to be honest about it, how many 55-year-olds or 65-year-olds have $600,000 liquid to start all over again? When you sell something and you don't have a source of income to immediately replace it, then that's a recipe for going broke. You know what? You just evaporated.
Right. Yeah.
There are 25-year-olds that might have $600,000 liquid, but more than likely they're getting it from their parents. But most parents in the United States, including, matter of fact, I was just talking about this yesterday. There was a TV show which was partly filmed in Chicago and based on real life in Chicago on the South Side. It was called Shameless. And one of the themes that were ran through that show was, here was a white family, and they referred their neighborhood on the South Side of Chicago got gentrified. And the question that you just asked, that's what happened to them. Once the house got sold, family members ended up homeless once the family house was sold.
Right. Because even if they rented the family house out, they would have some residual income.
You got residual income. The name of the game is like, that's why with the Booth settlement, I said, okay, now it doesn't sound sexy and it doesn't sound exciting to build one shed a day. But if you got 300 acres, and you got a team of people on each one of those acres, then instead of pumping out one shed a day, they're pumping out 300 sheds a day, 900 sheds a week, and that's just a 9-hour work week, just 9-hour work week. Then you know at the end of the year, you're splitting up over $243 million. But if you sell off those 300 acres, you're done. You got to start buying water again. You got to start going to Whole Foods and buying groceries again. You got to go get a job because when you get a job and you work for somebody else, you're making somebody else's family rich. Now, granted, you got to do what you got to do, whatever point of life you're at, okay? If you got to go to McDonald's and scrap, you know, flip burgers or whatever, you know, you got to do what you got to do. But eventually, you need to get that money, plow that money into a family business and then build up the family business.
So what if I have money but no land? See, some young people feel like, just go get the money, get the money and then do what with it?
That's why I told people, and they can do it while we're talking right now, go to eBay. I've been doing this show almost 10 years. 7 years ago, I went on eBay, and I found 10 acres of land in Texas for $2,000 total. That includes the taxes, transfer tax, and all that. And I still got that 10 acres of land. That's what, $200 an acre. When I met you in Chicago, I didn't come up to Chicago for my health. I came up there because I had $1,000 in on something. Only reason why I didn't close is because the guy went through some kind of divorce and was a clouded title. But that's why I came up there. I don't look for nothing in the city of Chicago. You know where we went. That's the kind of land I bought. So you can go to eBay. You can go to eBay right now and put up, and then look. You can look for land on eBay.
Okay, so my son is here. He's about to hop out the car because he's got to run and get it.
Right.
So I have a question for him. $1,000, what would you do with your money?
How much?
I'm giving him a question to share, a response.
Yeah, give me the question again. I didn't hear all of it.
He said he wanted to teach us.
No, that's what you sound like. You want me to tell you?
I want you to share it.
Our generation, this sound like what we would do, similarly what we always do with around 600. You don't really take that much. So most of us starting businesses, whether it's clotheslines, nails, hair, cutting grass, whether it be, you know what I'm saying, we fast with it. Whether, like she said, we get money, we don't take all day. And my mother take all studying. We don't, you know what I'm saying, everything we do, we know it's fast paced. We like moving fast, everything fast. So that's the reason why most of us don't really work jobs. If it's not a job that seems like hard to get the most money for our time, most of us don't see it beneficial. Other than we know it might be temp jobs or it might be a moving job that's cash in hand and it's more than that job or whatever. So $600,000, literally I would go find me maybe, and I don't really like no land here. You know what I'm saying? Can't really do too much in the United States at all. Well, freely, I guess, you know what I'm saying, your own. Nothing that you do here, I figured out you can't really do your own, you know what I'm saying? So money that you get, the food, health, I think I would take my money and go out of the United States and figure out what type of stuff I'm going to grow, shirts I'm going to sell, things I'm going to do in that nature or whatever.
So in order to grow, you're going to need some land somewhere.
Well, let me tack on to what he's saying. All right. Up in that neck of the woods.
I'm
on the same page with you. I wouldn't. If the city of Chicago and Chicago's a nice place and all that,
you
need to go to the rural parts of Illinois or Wisconsin.
Make sure your land
and the prices of everything dropped in those areas.
So it's all about, to me, like I said, what type of pieces your brain gonna put together to make what image it makes. So do one thing, is do multiple things that's getting money, multiple, not taking too long investments.
Right.
We can invest, but we only really like investments that take too long or that we don't really know. Like, we don't really like throwing coins in wells and hoping. We like doing stuff we know.
Well,
we can see.
Everybody, you know, you got to figure out.
Listening to somebody telling us what they did last week, not telling us what we could do or what they could do or that didn't do.
Well, now, what are your interests? What are you interested in? What are you interested in specifically?
What you spend it on, what you don't spend it on, what you invest in, or whatever.
So, Brother L.A., are you still there?
Yeah. I'm listening. The question I have for him is, what is he interested in as far as making money?
Well, I like the fact that he said grow, because we have talked about that as a family. But what are you interested in with the question?
Well,
that's making money.
I'm a basketball head. So depending on what area I end up trying to build in or whatever, I would like to coach youth or whatever in basketball or whatever, start gyms, stuff like that. I know kids and boys or whatever, younger than me or even my age, young men like to do stuff with the energy that they have all the time.
And right.
Hooping is a thing that a lot of people do. It's not even if it's for fun or whatever. So the point is to make teams with it. A lot of stuff around that nature. Growing any type of hands on, maybe landscaping. Because I moved furniture outside already, as we speak.
Right.
Anything.
All right. Well, basketball. There's a lot there that hasn't been tapped in. That's how I got to college, playing basketball. Matter of fact, one of my teammates in college, he's assistant coach for the Chicago Bulls. I don't follow like I used to, but Maurice Cheeks. We both played down at It was West Texas State when we went there. Now it's West Texas A&M. But there's a lot of untapped markets within basketball. Like I said, I don't keep up with it like I used to, but I know there's a lot of untapped territory there. So you can make money with that. And then, with anything is, once you find something that's making you a little bit of money, duplicate yourself. And just get other people to do it, and then just duplicate yourself, and your income's going to grow.
And that's what you call social capital, correct?
Right. Yeah, well, yeah, you're going to need social capital. That's relationships with people to make it grow. But with basketball, he can do that within the country. I mean, there are people now making money with basketball on a professional level. I'm not talking about NBA, but they're making six figures or seven figures. And they never even touched the NBA. There's one guy that he's about maybe a couple years older than me, Buzzy Brayman. He got a college scholarship to like East Carolina. Never played pro ball. Most people have never heard of him, but his thing is the shot doctor, and he was like a pioneer at it. So he basically got a lot of professional players to pay. I don't know how much he makes now, but he just took things that other people didn't see. I got another friend of mine that he helps kids get into college. So whatever I did, then you have some people that they just sell shoes. And they make six figures just trading, sportswear shoes. So whatever idea that you have for basketball, I'm sure you can make money at it, six, maybe even seven figures. It's just a matter of just get out there and put it together. And then, if you feel it's going to lead you to go out of the country, Mexico or the Caribbean islands or South America, a friend of mine I played college ball with, he became a professional ball player in Chile. Then he became a coach. He's been down there for like 30 years. So, you're on top of it. You got a good idea there, put it out there and market yourself.
Certainly, yeah. But thank you, AJ, for sharing your thoughts and your goals.
There's a lot with basketball, so there's so many ways to go. If I had to do basketball again on a high school level, and he hasn't met me, you have, Reba. I'm 6'8". I've been 6'8" since 15 years old. If I had to do basketball all over again, I wouldn't have gone out for the team as a player. I would have been a manager and look at it from a business point of view.
I got a question for you.
And got in the game on that point about that aspect of it.
I got a question for you because I'm 6 feet.
Right.
I think even or whatever, I might be 5'11". Now, I got a little bit of bounce or whatever. Now, and I know when it comes to basketball, height is something that you either blessed with
true.
It or you're not blessed with it.
True.
So basically, in real life, it's some people need their height to amplify their skills. Some people take up for the lack of height that they have.
Right. Here's my position on height. Because you have a lot of tall people that can't play basketball. And also, some of them might not even be interested in taking up the sport. I took up this. I wasn't even interested in basketball at first. But I'm not going to go through that whole story. Yeah.
That was actually my point. At 6'8", why wasn't you interested in basketball? And you've been 6'8", since you said 15?
Yeah. I started playing basketball probably when I started playing basketball in seventh grade. In sixth grade, because I was like over 6 feet in sixth grade. Okay. So in sixth grade, the basketball coach asked me, did I play basketball? I said no, and I didn't. Then wasn't interested in the game. Seventh grade, he asked me again and talked me into going out for the team. I went out for the team. I was surprised that I made it. I was probably about 6'2 then, 12 years old, 6'2, 6'3. And didn't play much. And then when I finally got in the game, I got the ball in the backcourt and I tripped over my feet. It was a home game. And the home team, the students, I mean, I got blasted, made fun of, all that, because I was probably the second tallest in the school at that time. So that summer I went to basketball camp and I learned the game. I learned the game, and then the next season in eighth grade, by that time I was 6'4" or 6'5", maybe even 6'6". I got most valuable player, and then by that time I learned the game, liked the game, and then I went to the Manford Catholic for 9th, 10th, and 11th grade, right outside of D.C. But at first I didn't. Now, after I got a scholarship to college and all this other stuff, and some people I played with in the Hall of Fame today. But if I had to do it over again, I would look at it from a business point of view, and I would have been the team manager, because I know people who got into the game that are athletic directors or that are head of athletic directors. They write the rules for the game of their particular conference, and they make more money that way. There's one guy, matter of fact, Mike Bray, who was the coach of Notre Dame. Huh?
Did a manager make more money than a player?
No, I'm talking. No. I'm talking about the people. Here's what the real money is made in basketball. Forget about the players. Mm-hmm. Forget about the owner of the team. And typically, a lot of owners are billionaires. Look at the people who manufacture the shoes. Look at the people like Michael Jordan. The person who, and they got a new movie about Michael Jordan called Air. The person who really made Michael Jordan rich, in my opinion, was his first wife, who knew about intellectual property, because Air Jordan is a private label. Like, for instance, what's your first name? Oh, you know what? Let's use your mother's name. You can put out a shoe brand called Air Reba. Air Reba is an intellectual property. With that, you can take a flight over to China and go to a manufacturer and get that shoe made to the design that you want and then come back over here and sell it. So if I had to do basketball all over again, I would hit it from that aspect. Because when Nike started, they had no competition. There's really not that much competition out here right now on making uniforms, basketball equipment. I would manufacture balls, shoes, uniforms. I would want to own whoever they buy rubber from. I would want to own a rubber company that sold rubber to other shoe manufacturers.
It's off.
That's the way I would hit it if I was coming up today. I wouldn't even play.
Go ahead.
I would even build basketball arenas. Well, basketball courts.
My youngest son.
I'm gonna say this. LeBron is still playing. He makes shoes.
Yeah.
Now Michael Jordan played and he makes shoes. Allen Iverson, Shaq, Kobe, Dwayne Wade, a lot of people.
Those are all private labels. you can have your own private label, like right now, if you wanted to.
My point was, you said where the money was, and of course we was talking about basketball, and I was gonna ask you if you knew somebody who didn't play basketball in the field of basketball that has that has more money than anybody or any former or past player that does.
I'll name two. One, he did it as a coach. Mike Bray, who coached Notre Dame basketball on a college level for like the last 19 or 20 years. He just retired out of that earlier this year. Next year he might be in broadcasting. Mike Bray in high school sat on a bench. He's a coach. He makes $2 or $3 million a year. The school that I went to, he's probably made more than Adrian Dantley, Hall of Fame, Kenny Cole, who played for the Portland Trail Blazers in North Carolina State. As a matter of fact, Kenny Hart, who played for the Portland Trail, you might not know his name. He makes $30 million a year in the construction business. Out in Portland, Oregon. Then there's another guy I know. He was the manager on one of my high school teams, white dude named Jeff Hathaway. Jeff Hathaway, I don't know how much he makes, but he was probably making more. And he's retired out of his career. So his career was like 20 or 25 years, and he was making, I don't know, anywhere from $300,000 to $500,000 a year. And there's only a handful of players that the lifespan of a professional athlete is like, it's a small window, like 3 to 5 years. That's about it. LeBron, Magic Johnson, and there's, you know, Shaq. There's a handful of them. You know, they've made money and they kept it, but, you know, I can name for each one of them, I can name 15 to 20 other players that had $25 million, $50 million, or $100 million over a career, but now they're broke.
And partly because they probably didn't invest in, like you said, intellectual property, getting the shoes, getting the
Well, the first thing is, if for instance, if and this is for any of us, if you're let's say you come out of high school 17, 18, 19 years old, and you get a multi-million-dollar contract, all right, I'm going to tell you what I would have done at 19 or at those ages. Now, I'm just me. I'm not judging anybody else. I would have blown it because it's easy to blow it on women, and then, you know, mama's got to have a house, and so-and-so's got to have a car. I knew a guy, Bo Robinson, like, see, these guys are ancient to you. The moment he got drafted by the Detroit Lions football team, he stopped going to class. Now, more than likely, Bo never took a business 101 class in college, and he was on scholarship. He could have taken a class for free, and he never took an accounting class. A lot of them don't take, you know, if you don't know anything about it, you should know the fundamentals of accounting, on how to count your money, before you can even hire the right accountant for you.
So have you ever heard of Antoine Walker, basketball player from Chicago?
Reeve, I haven't kept up with sports really since 1980. After my scholarship days were over with in 1980, and that's been a minute. Mike White's highlights. That's about it. If you know nothing past, highlight LeVar Ball. What's that?
I was going to ask you what happened with your scholarship and your basketball. If you didn't
know,
I graduated.
I graduated 4 years on time. I went in 1976. I graduated in 4 years exactly. In 1980. My degree was in mass communications, electronic, and out of the people that came in my freshman year, particularly when it comes to black ball players for football and basketball, it was only two of us. One football player that we're still friends to this day, and I was the only black basketball player that finished, that got our degrees in 4 years. That was it. The rest of them dropped out of school, flunked out, what have you.
So your scholarship, basically you did use your scholarship, right?
Yeah. Yep, I graduated on time.
Okay,
on
yeah.
time.
I think it sounded, you know, it almost sounded like you said you lost it, but you actually used your scholarship.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Good.
See, when I got it, there were 1 year renewables. So if you flunked off the thing, you lost the scholarship.
When did you stop playing basketball? And I want to know why, being 6'8".
All right, I graduated school 1976. That was the first year of college, and then the last year of college, which I graduated, was 1980. So my interest was, you know, when I got in there, mass communication. So basketball wasn't my only interest. Basketball was basically my tool to get me in college and pay for college 100%. That was my interest in basketball. That was it with me. And then after I got out of college, then I started learning about business and real estate. So like I say, the only thing that's interested me since I graduated that's dealt with basketball since then is one, LaVar Ball. And I like LaVar Ball. I mean, he's got a big mouth and everything. It's because LaVar Ball is, and a lot of people don't like him for whatever reason, but LaVar Ball talks about intellectual property. You have high schoolers now that if you learn about intellectual property, you can make $1 million or more just by learning how to tap your intellectual property. Like I say, you can, whatever your name is, you can put out your own shoe brand, your own basketball brand. Manufacturing is where the money, real money is in sports, is manufacturing and construction.
The products, right.
Manufacturing, the products, construction of the arenas, and then owning the arenas. Like, for instance, I give a prime example. You take a Catholic school that's in Chicago, just any one of them, that they have a gym. So, like, let's say on Friday night, if there's a Chicago, I'm making up names now, Chicago Catholic East plays Chicago Catholic West, all right? And then, you know, everybody's got their favorite. But the winner of that game, because if I ask the average person, who's going to win that game, Chicago East or Chicago West? And people will say, they'll pick whoever they think is going to win. The real winner of that game is neither one of those teams. The real winner of that game is the archdiocese who owns the gym, because they're making money on the door, coming and going. And then they don't need basketball at all. They can book other events in that gym and make money. So the real money in sports is not playing. If you ever read the book, $40 Million Slaves, read it. But the real money is in construction and manufacturing. That's the real money in sports.
There
are probably more Chinese millionaires. There are probably more Chinese people that live in China who's never been to the United States that make more money than any player that you could name in the NBA today. And you don't even know their name.
And I believe that the products that they either manufacture or produce.
Yeah, Nike is made over in Asia. If you get a chance, if you want an education on sports, all right, get past the hype and all that. If you want a real education on making money in sports, get your money together, get your passport, go over to the manufacturing plants over in China, and Vietnam. Go to those two places, and you'll see who makes the real money in sports.
Now, quick question. Now, the people that you, because I'm pretty much, I'm basketballed out, but I like the fact that you use your skills to get money to pay for college and you handle that. More sustainable.
I have a friend of mine that helps kids. I have a friend of mine in D.C., but it doesn't matter where you live. He helps get kids into scholarships. People that haven't even played, they can play, but for some reason they didn't play high school ball. He helps them get scholarships, athletic scholarships too, into college. So I can put you in touch with him.
Quick question.
But like I say, whatever idea that you have for sports, there's a lot of virgin territory up there. I would just say, man, put the idea out there and just roll with it and see where it takes you.
Do you have any – okay, so your friends – one of your – or two of your friends went to the NBA that you played ball with in high school, right?
I'll tell you who. Let's see. Adrian Dantley, we went to the same high school at the same time, but he was like 3 years ahead of me. Kenny Carr – and both of those dudes are retired. Adrian Dantley's in the Hall of Fame. Maurice Cheeks, who's an assistant coach for – if you contact Maurice Cheeks right now and say Lee Davis, because that's Nick, you know me, L.A., he knows Lee Davis. He'll acknowledge that. He's up at Chicago right now. That's where he started. He came out of DeSable High School. Roger Fraley, he went to Bradley. These are dudes all back in the – all the people I can name are back in the day dudes. I mean, before you were probably even born. Roger Fraley.
Brother L.A., I think they featured Maurice at DeSable at one of our alumni meetings.
Well, yeah, Maurice Cheeks graduated from DeSable 2 years. He came out in 1978. I came out, he got drafted by Philly in 78. But he graduated from DeSable High School, came down to West Texas State University when he first went there, when I first went there too. He was 2 years ahead of me. He got drafted by the Sixers, won a championship with the Sixers. Then he started coaching, and now he's an assistant coach back home in Chicago. I don't know others, but like I say, that's probably the – he's right there where you guys are.
Uh-huh. Well, I like
the
fact that –
I look at it from the business standpoint, particularly manufacturing. Yeah.
Yeah, he's doing something with his
I look at it from the intellectual property. And that's like all the players out there with shoes, that's intellectual property. Intellectual property is a fancy legal name for idea. That's all it is. So you got an idea and you put a copyright or a trademark or a patent on it. That's how your intellectual idea or intellectual property is protected. Now, if that intellectual property is in the form of a shoe, a polo shirt, a sweatsuit, a basketball, shoestrings, a basketball rim, you go over to places like China or East Africa and have them manufacture it at a low price, and then you bring it back over to a Western country like the United States, Canada, all of Europe, except for Eastern Europe, and you sell it to those places, and that's how those guys make billions of dollars.
Uh-huh.
Without playing a lick of basketball, without running a suicide.
Right. They basically use
without even knowing the rules of the game.
Did you ever feel like you was good enough to make it to the NBA?
No. There were other professional leagues around, because back then basketball was it was an international sport, but I wasn't in tune to it like, I know about it now. Like, you can go to South America, Europe. I mean, just like Brittany Griner. You know, why was she going to Russia? Because Russia was playing her more than she can get over here. China's been paying like that to NBA. There's more than one place. There's more than the NBA. Matter of fact, I think in the future there'll be a league that will rival the NBA, but it'll be a global basketball league. Because they got people that hoop in Europe that are just as good as the people over here. And I think the colorization of the NBA, well, there, it looks like, I don't keep up with it like you do, but it looks like more European players are coming into the NBA, and you'll probably trickle in some players from China as well, and I think you'll have more players from Africa right now, because like in Sudan, 6'8 is like a point guard. And their basket's over there 11 feet off the ground instead of 10 feet. So they play a slightly different game than over here. But, I can't, that's just my guess. I think, but the NBA, though, is angling to go international. You'll have NBA teams in London, Berlin and all that. And also to answer your question, back when I was playing, there were fewer teams. So a lot of people that are all-stars today in the NBA would have got cut in 1978 or 1980.
Oh.
Like this is before my time, when Bill Russell, because he won 11 championships, when he won those 11 championships, those years that he won it, there was only like 8 to 10 teams in the NBA. Now you got 30. So the competition was more, the creme de la creme, like I said, when I came out, it was harder to make it. And like I said, one friend of mine I played with, CJ, Carl Johnson, he went down to Chile, and he got paid to play in Chile. Now, you don't hear about it here, but this is a big world. The United States, in this world, the United States only has 4% of the total world population. That's it. Only 15% of the people around the world speak English. 85% of the world population doesn't even speak English. No hello, no goodbye, no yes. They don't speak it. They have different sports that they participate in. And they're basketball stars, paid basketball stars, in Russia, Finland, Norway, Sudan, that nobody talks about over here because we don't know their language. Because your mother speaks Spanish. I would say when you look at basketball, man, look at the whole globe. Look at the whole globe, and then the opportunity is there.
Well, it looks like the correlation, the consistency in retaining wealth, even for the basketball stars who made it, they invested some in construction, yourself, real estate. So it's beyond basketball, obviously.
Basketball has a very short window. LeBron James, it's rare to have a LeBron James because he came out of high school. And then there's a lot of politics in sports. See, I didn't notice until I got out of college. There's a lot of there's politics on a high school level when it comes to sports, particularly with AAU all up in there now. But there are people that are sitting up in the pros that there are people that are sitting at the local playground that are better than them. But what's the difference? Everybody who's sitting in the NBA right now, no matter whether you know their name or not, they have politics on their side. If you don't have politics on your side, you're not going to get into a – you're not even going to get on – to be honest about it, you need a certain amount of high politics to make a high school team. But
I agree.
There's
a
political side to it. Right. And you know what? I don't know if it's still on Netflix. There's a Netflix documentary called Broke. Check that film out. 60% of the players who, after they retire out of professional football and basketball, 60% are broke 5 years after they get out of the sport.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with that picture?
So I think some of the young people still think that, you know, I appreciate you clarifying the fact that there were basketball players who earned $8 contracts. Although it's expenses with that, you know, they need to understand the economic financial literacy end of, okay, you get paid this amount of money, you may that you may have these contracts, but there are expenses to put those into the contracts, like the music industry, as well as those that have been in the field and still are wealthy because of their investment. So I appreciate
right.
you sharing that.
Matter of fact, we're going to start doing a podcast on sports because a lot of people have been asking me over the years. Let's take your dad, who was an electrician. I mean, he was a three tradesman, but one of them was electrician. Can you imagine the electrician who has the company? Where do the Bulls play in Chicago? What's the name of that stadium?
United Center.
Whoever is the electrician who has the contract to handle the electrical work at that particular stadium makes more than some of the ball players on the Chicago Bulls.
Okay, makes sense.
It's not sexy. People don't know his name, but I'm sure when he goes to the bank and cashes those checks, he's all right with it.
That's right. Yeah.
Who's ever got the plumbing contract at that stadium makes some more than the players, probably most of the players on the team.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even going to get into the concession. I'm not talking about the vendors, but I'm talking about the person in charge of all the vendors.
Mm-hmm.
See, that's all. See, you got to look at the whole game, not just what's on the court or the field. That's what I'm saying. If I had to do high school all over again at 6'8", I'm the manager.
Makes sense.
I want to see how things operate. You know, I want to see, you know, because my high school, you know, we had our coach basically, he was doing shoe deals before anybody else was doing shoe deals on the high school level. Now, if a person wants to play pro, I can give them some guidance and advice. I mean, because it really comes down to, you know, the number of hours you put into it. Some days you might get a coach that can coach you on some things that you might weak at. I mean, for instance, for me, from a player point of view, I became a pretty good, a fair shooter. I was shooting 70-something from the field. I know 58 from the field, 77 from the free throw line. I would tell a person, and I would do that, but I was shooting like 500 shots a day, every other day. And then I would lift weights on those days off.
Do you believe that do you believe that if you know something, it's going to happen, but if you feel like it's not going to happen, it's not going to happen?
Well, you got to believe that you can make it. And then you got to put the work in behind it. So, like say, you're like a point guard in high school?
Yeah, point guard, shooting guard.
All right, point guard, shooting guard. Okay.
I'm kind of athletic. So, I can play, I can switch.
All right, well, now, how old are you right now?
26.
All right. Man, you can go over to South America, Western Europe, New Zealand, Australia. If you wanted to play pro ball, you can go research those countries, those professional basketball teams, maybe even Canada. you're still young enough, and you're probably still active enough, you know, where if you wanted to play pro ball from that aspect, you can go and get a, you know, I would if you feel like much about, I would go explore it. Because when you did that at the same time, you'd probably be picking up some things that other people don't see.
Gave me something to think about, but I appreciate you, man. I got to get to work.
All right, good talking to you.
Site.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, he's just going to run in and get his uniform. He let him know that he's going to be
He's still – how old you say he was, Reba?
He's 28, and so I'm trying to get –
He's still young enough. He's still young enough.
Yeah, yeah.
They're professional teams all through South America.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're professional teams on every continent. He's still young enough. He knows what to do to get in shape. And he can probably go to a number of those clubs and make it.
Yeah, a friend of mine, Ron Hicks, made that suggestion as well. Although he didn't go straight from high school to college and so forth, NBA. But Ron Hicks actually ended up selling the team. It was called Ron Hicks. What's the name of his thing? Chicago.
Well, Reba, you and I, you don't know this, but you're going to know it.
What's the name of the thing?
Somebody's been bugging me for the last 5 or 6 years to do a sports show. I've only done 3 or 4 of them on here. when I've had, I did one earlier this year with Kermit Washington. But he's retired from the NBA. But I'm gonna do a sports show that'll, because your son was asking some very good questions. But for today's games, all I watch are highlights every blue moon. It's
right.
You gotta have a three point shot these days. Even if you're 7 feet tall, you need to be able to drill it from the 3 point thing. So with him being a point guard and a shooting guard, if he's got that, if he's got that in his arsenal, which more than likely he does. But he's still young enough, and I'm sure he knows everything he needs to do to get in shape. So if I was him, I would explore it and see what's happening in another country.
Yeah, because that idea was shared. So now you've re-inspired him. And so he certainly wants to get out of Chicago and out of the country, basically.
Well, I can go to Canada. He can go to Canada. He can go to Mexico. Some of the Caribbean islands have professional leagues. While he's young enough, you know, like say 28, still young enough. He knows what to do to get in shape.
I'm just impressing upon my sons to realize, no, you can be mad at me all day. I'm not selling family wealth to have money and do something with it.
No, you don't want to do that.
We're not doing it. I was told to sell a building in Brownsville, and the goal was to rehab it. I was listening to my Zen boyfriend that I had of you. I believe maybe if I was his wife, it would have been different. I wasn't going to sell it, but instead of supporting me on rehabbing, I just took my sons and we were just doing the best we could. They didn't quite get it, that the dedication and focus needed to be in place to gut it out and rehab the building. And, they had other things. They were young. They had other things on their minds. They wanted to go and play basketball. We needed to gut that building out. If there was a man
reason why a lot of kids, they only see the visible part of an enterprise. They see somebody on TV or whatever dribbling the basketball, running the football, kicking the soccer ball. But a lot of them don't, like the owners of the NBA teams, all those dudes are billionaires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know. But if you ask them to name the names of the club owners, they might be able to name one. You know, Mark Cuban, Dallas Mavericks. But the Buss family owns the Los Angeles Lakers. But so it's like I said, is, you know, owning the, you know, there's a lot of ways that you can make money in sports without even participating in sports itself. But like I said, since he's still, you know, he's still young, he's only 28 years old, he's still a very young man, then you know what? You're a point guard, you know what to do. I ain't got to tell him. He knows what to do to get in shape. I ain't got to tell him that. All he needs to do is explore. And he already said outside the country. So his mind's there already. All he needs to do is find out what country that he wants to go to. And that's how, what's that dude that plays for the Charlotte Hornets? LaMelo Ball. LaMelo Ball went over to Finland. Then he went from high school. He went to Finland. Then he went to New Zealand. And then he got drafted by the NBA. So if your son's goal is to make it in the NBA, he might have to follow the path of LaMelo Ball, is go play outside the country and then come back into the country.
Yeah.
Right.
I'd be able to do that, yeah.
Right. You know, so.
Yeah.
We're going to start having sports shows. We might start this weekend, maybe Sunday or even whatever. I'll let you know, because people have been asking me to do a sport. Like, I've only done I did one this year, and then prior to that, I didn't do one for like 3 or 4 years.
Well, that is not
good questions.
I'm only interested because of my sons. I guess I'm learning along the way. However, I know that now, because he's going to need money to even go outside, he's going to need money to travel.
Well,
let's say he came out with
his name? What's his name?
His name is AJ, but we're going to have to focus on the land and earn him some money to buy a ticket to go.
So that's one way to do it. That's one way to do it.
Because I'm a single mom, that's the only way. As far as my support, I have to focus.
Does anybody in your family know how to sew?
I have two aunts that know how to sew. One of my aunts, I don't know if she's still able to do it. No. I can't think of anybody who's available to do it.
Okay. Well, I'm doing this. I'm using your name again.
I'm learning how to use it.
What's the family's last name? Brown or Boots? Which one do you want to use? Brown or Boots?
Brown is my married name. Boots is my family name.
All right. Boots Sportswear. You know, somebody can come up with a logo and then sell sportswear. There's a number of ways. Even if you got to sell cupcakes, you know what? Like I said, we're going to start having a weekly show on sports. But we ain't talking about what LeBron is doing. We're talking about people.
Right.
What can your son do? What can he do if you want to play? All right, talk to these people. If you want to get a scholarship, talk to this person. If you want to start a basketball-related business and not play the game at all, here's what you need to look at. So we're going to
not looking at what LeBron is doing, because our politics in all areas of life.
Yes,
you know,
politics on the high school level.
Yeah, we went through it. I had a coach who's since transitioned, but he wouldn't let my son play because my son went to DuSable, ironically, and
right.
he was going to play for that team. Coach Hamp was one of the head coaches over there, and really just was trying to – it was a battle to get my son to play on the team because they said he needed to be, I think, a year off of the other team in order to play against the team, something like some politics. And I fought and I fought and I fought. My son basically just gave up, and he was just happy to be a part of the team. I think he went in a couple of times or whatever, but that other coach at the other school literally did everything he could to block my son from playing because he knew my son's skills. And that
right.
would have caused them to not be, you know, a number one team at the time. And that at the time was Bogan High School. So DuSable was this team that he was aspiring to join. But I think he needed to be off of one, that same team, I think, in the division. Am I saying it right? The team,
yeah.
as far as he needed to be off of a team for a year in order to play. It was something I did read it. It was something with the
Well, we're going to start because the show that I used to run on is called the Sports Quadrant. Like I said, earlier this year, I had a former player on Kermit Washington. He played for the Los Angeles Lakers, and he played for the Portland Trail Blazers for a number of years. So, matter of fact, I will bring him back on. So somebody like your son can speak to somebody who's actually been in the NBA.
Uh-huh.
And whatnot. So, you know, all I can tell him is, you know, my goal was to get into college and to graduate in 4 years. That was my goal. That's how I used basketball to get what I wanted.
And there's a lot of broke basketball teammates that just,
there's a lot of people, I would say probably.
I don't know.
I saw a revolving door where, you know, they got into school, but, I mean, well, some people, because college isn't for everybody. I mean, there's one guy that I played with. You tried basketball. Well, he was on scholarship. He played for 1 year, and he's, you know, college is my thing. And he went to the Navy, and that's fine. You know, for me, I said, you know,
Navy has a better label.
Right. So it's you know, just like I told you, son, if I had to do it again from a high school level, I wouldn't have played. I would have been the team manager, and I would have networked with other managers and then learned the business side of the sport. Because as a player, the window is the average career for an NBA player is like maybe 3 years. It's not long. Football is about the same. It's not long. Now, LeBron James has been up there for quite a number of years.
We're going to use that land that we're talking about instead of selling it off. We'll build sheds or whatever we need to do. And if he decides he wants to go, because this is a part of, because I did tell my son, he thought it was bogus. I said, no, the Booz family did not give the women any wealth. Any property. They did not get any property passed on to them. And it makes sense to me because the women would not be carrying on the family name. The sons would be carrying on the family's name. So the women had to marry someone who had wealth. And there's another, in addition to that, maybe there was a way where they could, you know, tap into maybe something like that. But I would want to know, like, okay,
y'all brought up some good points today. Right. You guys brought up some good points today because that's why I'm at least once a week we're going to have the show will be called the Sports Quadrant. Now, the show's still going. Chris, I'll open up your mic because Chris has been patiently waiting for the last 2 hours. So
Chris, Grand Rising Crew.
Chris,
right.
what's on your mind? We got off on a tangent, Chris.
Oh, you're all good. I've been listening, you know. But we also started talking about, you know, some people to inspire the youth. You know, you brought in, you know, Kermit Washington on that one show. I've got, you know, one Super Bowl, two-time Super Bowl champion that would come on the show and inspire the other kids. And I've got
and then, like,
two
say,
NFL
Chris, right, Chris, you're a builder.
Go ahead.
So it's like a lot of these kids don't hear it, but, you know, if you can build a basketball court or you can build a gym, you know, they're people. See, nobody in sports talks about the people who build the arenas or build the practice facilities. There's a lot of money in that, but the average player, that 15, 16, 20-year-old, they don't talk about that because they haven't been exposed to that.
Correct. And they need to know that, you know, they
build
their own community center. All they got
to
do is want it. If they want
exactly.
it,
they can
see to it, they get it.
Right. Now, you see, you open up a whole – man, I love it. If they build their own community center – that's a niche that I haven't heard anybody talk about at all. Build
That's
your own community center.
I just got the offer yesterday. There's an 18-acre piece of property in Normal, Illinois that was owned by Illinois State
uh-huh.
University. And it's got 80
okay.
apartments on it. So
okay.
they asked me to build 10 buildings to these buildings. So they had a utility building on the end of the building. So I got
right.
to talking to him, and I said, what are you going to do with the other 12 acres that ain't developed? It's all grass. And they said, oh, we're going to build a veterans community here, an elderly community here, affordable housing over here. And I'm like, okay. I said, what about building it with the kids of this community? I said, give them something positive to come over here and do every day. I said, through the summer they can do more hours, but I said, just doing an hour or two in the afternoon. I said, but let them, you know, do this. I said, and what they can get out of it is like, we'll give them a home. I'll turn around and bring the house. We'll build it right here on the premises. It's 18 acres, all fenced in. I can put security guards at the door, and I want to rent all 80 units. And I said, so get me a lease. And he said he loved the fact that the kids could do this, and he knows it. The reason they're not building it out of metal is because they looked at it costing more money. But when he looked at what I showed him, it's actually the same cost, and I'm still paying everybody. So these kids are earning an adult wage because they're earning a home. They're getting paid for the time they're putting in by paying it forward. But at the same time, everything that they're building is going to be bringing in money. So
right.
it's being paid for. So I'm going to pay it forward by buying them all the material to build them a home, and then we're going to build them a home together. So that's social equity. So,
right.
you know, let's do this in every community, and let's build the community center. We're going to build a community center there.
Man, I love that idea. Build a community center, and it can be a private type thing, too, where you have a membership and all that. That's an excellent idea. Excellent idea.
You know, yeah, the thing is we're going to go back to amazing – Alice, we brought her name up in a minute. She said, if they build it, they will stay.
That's true.
You remember that?
Yep.
I love my memory just because I love when people say things that I can remember.
Right.
And
now, Reba,
it impacts me.
Reba, now your dad was he did electrical, carpentry, what was it, and plumbing? Reba, you still there? Okay. Our light's still on. That community center brings in the building trades. And you know what? That would be a good way to make the building trade. Reba, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah. Chris talked about teaching the kids about building community centers, teach them how to do it. And I thought about your dad.
Yeah, manufacturer.
Because, well, with the community center, you're going to need electrical, you're going to need plumbing, and you're going to need carpentry.
Yeah, the trades, yeah. Need those skills. Yeah.
Anyway, we're going to have a sports show. We'll start it next week. And it'll be called the Sports Quadrant, so I'll put at least once a week. So I guess we'll be going. So I'll put it in on Friday or Sunday evenings. You know, it'll probably be Sunday evenings because I'm looking at, we want kids to, the young folks to participate, including teenagers. I'll be soliciting people on, you know, what's a good time. I guess Sunday evening at, you know, around, I don't know. Reba, what's a good time for you on Sunday evenings?
On Sunday?
Yeah. Evening.
4 or 5 p.m.
4
yeah.
or 5 p.m. Okay,
well,
Chris,
between
what about
4 and
you?
6. They're coming out of 4 church. And 6. Yeah.
Oh, they are. They should be out of church by then.
They will, but, you know, they're going to have dinner or something.
Yeah, they got to have dinner and all that. Yeah. Okay. All right. 5, 6. Yeah, okay. All right. Because we don't want it to get nothing past 8 p.m. And whatnot. Okay, well, I don't know what we're going to talk about tomorrow. So it'll be open mic. And whatnot. On that note, thank you, Reba. Thank your son for me. Because we're gonna reboot the sports show. And it'll cover stuff we talked about. It won't be your normal sports show. You know, where they just talk about last night's game, and instead of talking about how much LeBron makes. Let's talk about how much the guy who built the community center, how much they make. You know, how much did the electrician make? You know, that kind of stuff. What do you say, Chris? Say that again. You're breaking up.
That wasn't me. It was someone else's microphone.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, on that note, because I'm running low on my battery here, so we'll see you guys tomorrow. Everyone, have a good rest of the day.
Greetings to all of you.